Amid the twin crises of climate change and nature loss, it's easy to feel disheartened. Yet across the country, gardens offer patchworks of quiet but powerful resilience. Nurture them and reap the rewards for people and nature, says Sheila Das, the National Trust's head of gardens and parks. And discover four trust gardens already adapting to tomorrow's challenges and thriving in the process. The feature is read by Akia Henry, Glenn McCready, and Tatia Newell.
We are a nation of gardeners. Whether we're tending our own plots, wandering through public gardens, or seeking green spaces in our cities, these cultivated places meet a deep human need to be close to nature. Around 41 million people in the UK gardened at least once a month in 2024, according to the most recent figures from the Royal Horticultural Society, RHS. Yet it's also widely reported that as a nation, we are more disconnected from the natural world than ever. That contradiction, our longing for nature combined with our distance from it, may be the very reason to explore how we garden and how through our gardens we might rekindle that bond with nature. Today's gardens face real pressure. Last year brought the driest spring in more than a century, followed by the hottest summer on record, with long dry spells and soil baked hard by the sun. These extremes were punctuated by sudden storms that highlighted how unstable our weather has become. The UK is also living through a nature crisis. We've seen long-term declines in insects, birds, amphibians, and wild plants, a pattern driven by habitat loss, pollution, and increasingly unstable weather. Gardens are some of the few spaces where many species can still find refuge. It's easy to feel overwhelmed that we can't make a difference, but our gardens might just hold the key. Some gardening habits that have become commonplace, such as artificial grass, synthetic feeds, pesticides, and water-hungry planting, no longer fit comfortably with the challenges ahead. As we learn more about the impacts of our modern lives on our natural environment, there is a growing awareness of the need for more nature-friendly gardening. The question now is whether we can see ourselves as part of the ecosystem and our gardens as places where real change begins. Given the severity of our environmental emergency, we should not be afraid to be bold. Now is the time to get creative and explore new approaches. It may feel daunting at first, but it's also an invitation to rediscover novelty, imagination, and joy in how we garden. At the Trust, this shift is already underway. Across the gardens in our care, we're refining a more sustainable, long-term approach that encourages resilient, healthy growth for the future. Instead of chasing quick results, we are making considered changes that bring nature along with us. That might mean choosing smaller plants that establish more strongly, or observing which creatures are using our gardens, or pausing between decisions to see what nature does next. We invite our visitors to learn with us, to notice small changes alongside us, and to celebrate the moments of quiet joy along the way. Balancing all of this with the responsibility of caring for historic landscapes isn't simple, but we are also custodians for the generations that will follow. At heart, gardeners are practical problem solvers who meet difficulties with creativity. Even the most difficult moments, like the dramatic storms of recent years, can open space for new life. We know that some historic practices are no longer sustainable, and we want to try to reduce the impact we have on the environment. So our first question is, do we need to intervene at all? And if we do, how can we act in ways that benefit people while reducing our dependence on mains water, protecting resources and increasing habitat rather than diminishing it? Because gardens collectively matter. Our public and domestic gardens cover about 4.6% of UK land. This may not sound vast, but when they're linked together, they can form powerful wildlife corridors. Healthy garden ecosystems can make a profound change to our environment too, regulating water flow, improving soil health, cooling and cleaning the air, as well as bringing more biodiversity into our lives again. And none of this means stepping back or letting our gardens look unloved. Quite the opposite. We can create clear cues to care. A crisp edge, a thoughtfully placed pathway, a beautifully arranged pile of fallen wood to show that we, the gardeners, remain present. Arcadia, a new forest garden at Shugborough in Staffordshire, has taken shape slowly over several years and is set to open fully later this year. The thoughtful design by Shugborough's senior gardener Lizzie Pellow was created to help people imagine the garden before a single spade touched the soil. Forest gardens are packed with diverse vegetation and habitats to encourage symbiotic relationships between plants, helping them to thrive and build resilience to the effects of a changing climate. Arcadia will be one of the largest gardens of its kind in the country and aims to encourage visitors to try their hand at forest gardening at home. Developing gardens for the future needs quality, sustainability, and community at its heart. We could call this slow gardening. If we embrace it, we might find ourselves at the start of a new era of gardening. How exciting to be part of it!
Adapt and thrive. Four trust gardens show how adapting for nature and climate can bring ecological benefits and boundless beauty.
Lindsay's vision reimagined. Clifden in Buckinghamshire. Clifden's historic 200-metre, 656-foot long garden was created in the 1930s by British designer Nora Lindsay for the Astor family. It features a long central pathway with Lindsay's characteristic thoughtful colour schemes and bold dynamic use of plants and topiary. But the team was becoming aware of how unsustainable the annual planting schemes were, as they required buying new plants each year, disturbing the soil frequently, and using a lot of water. In addition, the central grass pathway could not withstand the foot traffic, and the box hedging was suffering from box moth caterpillar damage and box blight. The team was therefore faced with a daunting task: how to reimagine the garden to make it more sustainable and improve access for visitors while honouring its historic legacy. Head gardener Anthony Mason says, "We spent a lot of time researching Nora Lindsay and thinking about how she might redesign the garden today. She liked to use colour and texture, and we've tried to honour her ethos in the new planting design." The team replaced the central pathway with smooth Yorkstone paving, planted the more resilient dwarf yew in place of the box hedge, and replaced the annual bedding plants with more sustainable perennials. Anthony says, "We put in over 6,000 perennials, which require far less water than annuals, and we used plants like hellebores to provide colour in the winter and swathes of ornamental grasses amongst the perennial planting. Grasses weren't available in Lindsay's day, but we think she'd have used them because they provide height and drama." Anthony and the team decided to use small plants to create the new scheme, which are far more sustainable than large ones. This required them to hold their nerve while the plants were getting established. Anthony says, "Some were only a couple of centimetres tall, so we had to be patient and let them develop. Within a couple of months, the smaller plants took off and wildlife exploded. We now see far more bees, butterflies, moths, hoverflies, and other insects in the garden. With the annuals replaced by perennials, soil disturbance is reduced and the soil ecosystem can thrive."
Anthony's top tip: make the swap to perennials. He says, "If you're thinking of switching some of your annuals for perennial plants, you might find inspiration at Clifden. Take time to walk slowly and see what plants and combinations appeal to you. Focus on a small patch you like and think about structure and textures. You can then translate that into a vision for your own garden and its conditions. Choose things you really fall in love with."
Making future history. Dufferin Gardens in the Vale of Glamorgan. Head gardener Chris Flynn says, "During the pandemic, when Dufferin had to close to visitors, I sat by one of the ponds and watched a kingfisher. I had time to notice the amount of life in the garden and wonder how I might help more of it to thrive once visitors returned." The team spent the following 3 years recording everything that lived in the garden. They enlisted the help of bat, bee, and lichen specialists from all over the UK to help them identify what was hiding in plain sight. Chris says, before the survey, we had already returned a lot of our previously mown lawn to meadow, as it would have been historically. We believed it would have more value for nature this way, and the survey proved that it is even more significant for biodiversity than we realised. The survey results are shaping their work to restore the Edwardian Garden, a huge-scale project that will be another 10 to 15 years in the making. The meadow in particular is already helping adapt the garden for climate change, reducing the amount of reflected heat during the summer and capturing more rainwater over winter. Ponds, a historic feature, are playing their part for nature and climate adaptation too. The formal lily ponds support great crested newts and are full of dragonflies. The team plans to add ephemeral ponds, temporary wetlands that fill seasonally with water. As well as providing habitat for amphibians and invertebrates, the ponds will help the ground to hold more water. To the team's surprise, the survey showed how wildlife was using the more formal and traditional parts of the garden, as well as the more natural sections. Chris says, we discovered that some invertebrates and small mammals were visiting the manicured flower beds just as readily as other parts of the garden. Even in our most carefully tended bedding, we discovered rare brown-banded carder bees. It's encouraging news for Chris, who is aware that the garden is also putting on a show for the hundreds of thousands of people who visit each year to enjoy its flamboyant and opulent Edwardian planting. The plan, Chris says, is to make it as good as it can be while working more in harmony with nature.
Chris's top tip, take time to notice nature. He says, try to find out what wildlife you have in your outside space so that you can better look after it. A great way of doing this is to choose a flower, such as a daisy or a dandelion, and watch it for 10 minutes to see which insects visit. It's a technique we use here at Dufferin. Insects are at the bottom of the food pyramid, so if they're doing well, it's usually a good sign that everything else is too.
Counting Every Drop, Hidcote in Gloucestershire. Designed a little over a century ago by American horticulturalist Major Lawrence Johnston, Hidcote is celebrated as one of England's most influential arts and crafts-inspired gardens. Since it was formed, Hidcote has relied on a natural spring to feed its stream, pools, and in more recent years, three 36,000-litre storage tanks supplying the irrigation system. But in 2025, during the hottest summer on record, the spring ran critically low. The gardeners had never needed to monitor usage closely before, and although they planned to stop watering the larger lawns during droughts, the conditions raised urgent questions about water use across the entire garden. Head gardener Lottie Allen recalls, "Initially, we used mains water to fill the gap, but once drought set in, we realised this wasn't sustainable long term." The team decided to halt supplementary watering and instead adapt to a dramatically reduced supply. The formal lawns along the central axis were left to turn brown. Pots and planters continued to receive water, but only sparingly, with moisture monitors ensuring not a drop was wasted. The drought finally broke in late August, but the need for a new long-term approach to water consumption was clear to Lottie. She says, "We're trialling waterproof paints to line terracotta pots, adding sources wherever possible, installing more water butts and fitting a meter to the water tank so we know exactly how much we're using." During last year's drought, the team discovered that plants cope better in areas that have been mulched. This year, they are prioritising thicker mulches in key areas and using wood chip elsewhere to help slow moisture loss. Hidcote's gardeners are moving away from the annuals used by Johnston to fill gaps, instead opting for robust perennials able to tolerate prolonged dry spells. Lottie says, "Now we're preparing earlier, making decisions faster, and helping the garden adapt for the future."
Lottie's top tip, plan for resilience and resplendence. She says, finding plants able to cope with hot, dry summers and the UK's typical wet winters is proving difficult, but there are options to try. We found peonies did particularly well in the drought. Salvias, such as Salvia nemorosa cardona and Salvia royal bumble, coped well with the heat and then flowered later. Classics, such as Lavangula and Gustifolia munsted, enjoyed the heat but will only manage a wet winter where the soil drains well.
Inner Beauty, Nunnington Hall in North Yorkshire. Nunnington has been managed organically for almost 25 years, an unusual move back then, and one that senior gardener Nick Fraser helped pioneer. He recalls, "We had visitors asking if our lawnmower was broken because we had long grass in the orchard. We had to explain that we were creating wildflower meadows." Now, of course, it's much more common to come across areas of wildflowers in a historic garden, and in today's changing climate, Nunnington's soil is reaping the benefits of using organic techniques. All the things we've championed for years now, such as making compost and using it to mulch the surface of bare soil, means we have great soil structure that helps the garden stay resilient, says Nick. In times of drought, we have more moisture retention, and in very wet weather, that helps reduce flooding, which is an issue for us here on the banks of the River Rye. Alongside an overall better soil structure, Nunnington's team has made some changes to future-proof elements of the historic garden. They've recently reworked the iris garden, originally thought to have been designed in the 1920s by former owner Mrs. Fife, following a generous gift from the estate of trust supporter Mrs. Gertrude Mary Louis. The new garden's designer, Christina Claude, has come up with a modern, nature-friendly plan. It includes more seating, level access so wheelchair and pushchair users can enjoy the garden for the first time, and a new wildlife pond that's already attracting dragonflies and other insects. Nick says, "If we're not making gardens where people, plants, and nature can coexist, then I don't think we're gardening properly." In keeping with Nunnington's closed-loop ethos, in which nothing leaves the garden, the reworked iris garden has been made using as many materials as possible from its predecessor. This includes the Yorkshire stone paving, which has a new life as raised flower beds now awash with year-round interest. Nick says, "I think people are starting to look beyond the surface of a garden to see what has gone into making it, and are finding beauty is more than skin deep. Organic, nature-friendly, climate-resilient gardening. To me, that's all just gardening."
Nick's top tip, give organic a go. He says, "If you want to try gardening organically, try to be patient. Using bug sprays creates reliance because you lose your natural biological controls, so you think you have to keep spraying. When you stop, you might have to wait a year or two for balance to be restored. We get aphids on our roses, but the blue tits fledge as the aphid numbers peak, and within weeks, the birds have stripped most of them off." And you can discover more climate-resilient gardening tips and ways to boost wildlife at nationaltrust.org.uk/gardening-tips.